Universität Hamburg.
Zombie Romancing the Undead. Remember how zombies used to shuffle and moan? You could easily outrun them, if not, however, for long. Today's menacing zombies run, they jump, they truly hunt, as in 28 Days Later or the remake of George R. Romero's Dawn of the Dead. So whatever happened to the slow zombie? He's fallen in love, or is matchmaking, that's what happened. In this paper, I'm going to give a genre-defining categorization for the new phenomenon called romantic zombie comedy, or short, rom-zom-com. The first film to actually acknowledge this new trend and thus paving the way for other films to follow is 2004's Shaun of the Dead, even subtitled A Romantic Comedy with Zombies. Yet this paper, the genre, as this paper is going to show, is not as homogeneous as it might appear. In fact, I aim to distinguish between three varieties of the rom-zom-com. In the first step, I will look at the history of the zombie, as I realized I'm probably the only one, as my zombie panel will short and shorter, then at defining features of the romantic comedy, and in the final step, analyze the three varieties with respective examples with regard to the romantic notion and its meanings. So the zombie has undergone a huge change during his relatively short medieval appearance. Zombie culture is a phenomenon which merits a holistic examination as it has shifted in correlation to societal changes. It is possible to see the shift of ideas and values from the end of the 20th century through the first decade of the 21st, as J.C. Stokes writes. Yet, there was even a shift in zombie narratives before Romero thought up and directed one of the most famous and influential zombie movies of all time, The Night of the Living Dead, in 1969. In the Haitian voodoo tradition, a number of powerful and unorthodox voodoo priests called Bokors possess a keen knowledge of natural drugs and sedatives and have created a zombie powder that renders its victims clinically dead. This zombie powder is a strong neurotoxin, which affects the bodily functions of the victim and lets him or her appear dead to the untrained eye in a state of profound paralysis. Once the effect of the substance wears off, the person prior believed to have been dead is resurrected by the Bokor, and this person becomes the slave of the Bokor. Yet the lack of oxygen to the brain has left its traces. The victims are now visibly slower, both in movement and intellectual activities. But they are still capable of all normal human feelings. They smile, cry, even growl with anger if hurt or otherwise provoked, something real zombies or the Romero zombie would never do. Although the voodoo zombie has entered cultural heritage in the early 20th century, it was George R. Romero who shaped our knowledge and perception of the living dead tremendously. Romero liberated the zombie from the shackles of a master, the Bokor, and invested his zombies not with a function, which is that of a slave, but rather a drive. The zombie's only incentive is now the hunger for flesh. After this radical reinterpretation of the zombie, the next big leap has been made in the last decade of the 20th and the first years of the 21st century. After the voodoo zombie and the Romero zombie, a double evolution has taken place. On the one side, there's the zombie as companion, and on the other side, there are the afflicted or infected. Already the plural of the latter category implies that the zombie is no longer alone, but rather a nameless face amongst a crowd of countless others, blurring into a crowd of bodies. The infected, the name of which is taken from Danny Boyle's 28 Days Later, are also driven creatures, but the eating of flesh fades into the background. It is about being a symptom rather than a cause of society upheavals and inexorable collapse. They might devour flesh, they might spread rage, but they surely want society to end the way it is now. The afflicted are zombies at a stage prior to the infected. They are dead whilst living. Having the same routine which gets repeated every day renders them dead, although they have all the bodily functions and needs the Romero zombies and the infected do no longer suffer from. When they are eventually zombified, which will happen inevitably, their behavior and demeanor hardly changes. Their inner death merely surfaces. An example of which would be the factory worker Charlie Chaplin depicts in Modern Times, who does all the same things ever and ever, over and over again every day. The zombie as companion has the lust for flesh, but just like the infected, the hunger takes a back seat. He or she has a master, as did the voodoo zombie, but although that master or mistress might have started out in the form of a Bokor, the relationship will change and something entirely different will develop, an equality between the two. They profit from each other and might even fall in love. Which brings us to the actual topic, the rom-zom-com. In her study of the romantic comedy, Tamar Jeffers McDonald characterizes the genre as having as its central narrative motor a quest for love, which portrays this quest in a light-hearted way and almost always to a successful conclusion. This quest is played out in very standardized plots. Mark Rubinfeld identifies four, of which two will usually occur together: the pursuit plot, the redemption plot, the foil plot, and the permission plot. To summarize them very briefly, in the pursuit plot, the hero woos the female lead, wows her, and wins her. In the redemption plot line, the hero is either cold-hearted and bitter, or broken-hearted and lonely. In any case, he needs a caring, mother-like female figure who teaches him the value of love. These storylines basically characterize each rom-com. The foil plot introduces additional characters to add problems to the formulaic mixture. Either the hero gets competition by stock characters Rubinfeld dubs rather self-explanatory, the prick or the dweeb, or the heroine has to stand up and out against the bitch or the temptress. The last plot is rather out of script writing fashion, the permission plot, as it sees the love-bound couple faced with tremendous problems so that their only options are separating or eloping. Rubinfeld claims that inherent in these four possible plots is the fact that in the Hollywood rom-com, the romantic element outweighs the comedic elements. Rom-coms, therefore, enforce stock elements and key concepts which must not be missed from such a movie. The iconography, urban setting, costumes and props usually associated with weddings, narrative patterns, which is boy meets, loses, regains girl, and ideology. The happy end only awaits the white, heterosexual and attractive couple. For the following categorization, it is understandably important to recognize the structures that underlie these romantic comedies, which have shaped the general recognition by audiences worldwide. Adding now the third component, namely the zombie, the focus needs to adjust shift. Or does it? I identified three subcategories of the rom-zom-com, and they are characterized by the love couples. The first deals with human and human couples. The second sees a relationship blossoming between human and zombie. And the final pairing is between zombie and zombie. So, the first subcategory, human-human, seems to be the most logical and hardly surprising. Two humans fall in love in the times of zombie plagues. It is not unheard of that crises bring people closer together, but zombie plagues hardly ever were a reason for blissful togetherness before, mainly because at least one part of the couple got devoured before the credit rolls. But with regard to the popular formula meet, lose, regain, the human-human couples oftentimes have met already, but find themselves in a crisis, even without zombies. In Dance of the Dead, my first example, the protagonists Jimmy and Lindsay are a couple, but they quickly terminate their relationship. The high school sweethearts are presented without the famous meet-cute, which is defined as the point in the narrative in which the lovers encounter each other in a way which forecasts their eventual union. When we first see them, Jimmy takes a dead frog, which is to be dissected during biology class, and uses it as a hand puppet. Afterwards, while talking about tonight's prom, they are in high school still, Lindsay tells him it would be really nice if he were romantic for once, and Jimmy's reply is, "I am romantic." It is supposed by her, "Is everything a love for you? I'm a woman, I like a corsage instead of a dead frog." This dead frog gets resurrected in the end, and it's fairly hilarious. The dialogue characterizes Jimmy as the underachieving loser who does not care about his social status, not being satisfying enough to his girlfriend. On the other hand, it also makes Lindsay's romantic notion rather clear. The corsage stands metonymically for her girly wish for a perfect prom, an event of which it is said that it is the timeless apotheosis of teen love. The prom signifies a happily ever after in each and every teenager rom-com. Therefore, it becomes paramount to have the best prom possible. This escapist notion of inflating the prom to signify the ultimate happily ever after is in tune with traditional romances. As long as the epitome of romance happens and goes smoothly, in this case the prom, everything else will fall into place too. This is also the reason why Lindsay and Jimmy eventually have their slow prom dance amidst a horde of zombies. They can dance, and thus the end is not nigh, and romance might still triumph. The frog, on the other hand, that one, is of course linked to the fairy tale of the Frog Prince, the most famous redemption plot. Jimmy is not ready yet to be the man Lindsay so desperately wants and needs, and just like in the fairy tale, the princess does not see the true qualities of the frog, which lie hidden in the beginning. That is, until the dead return to the world of the living. In human-human rom-com-coms, the zombie is imperative to the story's further unfolding, for the hero loses the heroine, usually by her dumping him. And it is only during the fight with and against the zombies that they finally reunite again, this time for good. The couple will form a lasting relationship, and their story will end as soon as they do so. As the first meet-cute has happened offstage, the audience is treated to another one, here the dance at the prom, which has the heroine marvel at the decisiveness and assertiveness of the male, a feature he has shunned and or ridiculed beforehand. It is interesting to note the human-human rom-com still enforces gender stereotypes. The male is the active part and the female is to be rescued. This pursuit plot, which denies the female an empowering turn as the final girl, which has become the standard or rather stock character in contemporary slasher movies. Yet after Lindsay has escaped some zombies, she rescues three geeky boys from the sci-fi club and tells the boys what to do. She immediately establishes her superiority and thus feminizes the girlfriendless geeks even more, and she does this whilst wearing this bright pink prom dress whole time. Even as she's bossing the boys around, she desperately tries to call Jimmy on his mobile and wants him to rescue her. Happening in the split of a second, she demonstrates power only to reduce herself to the damsel in distress immediately afterwards. Catherine Belsey writes in her book on desire that in the traditional romance and the redemption plot, the heroine teaches the cold-hearted hero her ways and thus feminizes him as she remodels him to her likeness. This can also be said for dance. Lindsay is a strong character, an achiever, and she wants Jimmy to be just like her so that she can relax into the role of the helpless female once she has taught Jimmy the manly ways. Eventually, Jimmy manages to regain Lindsay and turns her from ex into current girlfriend. Realizing her in danger, he awakens from his underachieving status and rescues and protects his beloved. Thus, the new structure of the standard formula becomes boy already has and loses girl, faces zombies, gets girl back. The zombie present an important plot device, yet they are not the focus. They are the means, but nothing else. However, in the films, they are the source for much of the comedy. As the zombies are presented as slow and dim-witted and behaving like the living, pointing towards the general status of the afflicted, and you cannot see this, but they are standing around the prom eating finger food and taking pictures of themselves. They are the source of much of the laughter. They guarantee that the tone of the movie does not get too dark or scary. In the human-human rom-com, the zombie and the comedy are nearly synonymous. Turning away now from the interhuman relationship towards that between human and zombie, I will now discuss Fido. Here, due to irradiation from outer space, all the dead come to life. But one cunning scientist has invented the collar, turning the flesh-eating, shuffling zombies into moaning household slaves. In the film's 1950s American suburb, everyone become a master of a zombie. Helen, the main character, wants such a zombie slave because hers is the only household without one, which makes her feel inferior, left out, and poor. It becomes apparent very quickly that this can also be applied to her love life. Her husband Bill is obsessed with funerals but does not care about his family. So all Helen has got and does is caring about appearances and what the neighbors might think. This changes when she buys a zombie to help around the house. Her friendless, rather lonely son Timmy instantly takes to him and christens him Fido. Here the first relationship is established. Fido becomes a companion to Timmy, who does not fit in because he questions the other people's behavior towards the undead. Paffenroth writes that the fact that the loved one who dies will immediately rise up and try to kill you means saying goodbye must be discarded or replaced with a new expedient of shooting the loved one between the eyes. Timmy cannot accept that, for he realizes a kindness in Fido and his humanity even despite the collar. Yet he is aware of the flesh-eating nature of his friend and asks his mother about it. Helen answers that zombies kill because that's in their nature. It's not their fault. They decide not to have a funeral but to go zombie. The zombie, thus, stands for not wanting to be limited to the corset of values of that time or the fake morality and facade-obsessed society. The collar is society's way of sedating those unruly people who will not behave compliantly and controlling them. Helen has also taken a liking to Fido, but cannot admit to herself that it is an attraction rather than a friendship. Additional to Timmy's christening, she puts Fido in Bill's clothes and thus providing him with a more individualized attire than the customary jumpsuit the zombies get delivered in. This is the jumpsuit they all wear, and even the females, doesn't even matter, and now she puts him in a suit. This is also when the meet-cute happens. Seeing Fido for the first time, not in his slave clothing, but in those of his master, Helen realizes that the undead Matt is more human than her own husband. Tellingly, this scene is shot in the way most iconic to most rom-coms, with both characters standing in front of a mirror which now displays the hidden nature of the subject. Just like Jimmy, the frog prince disposes of his ugly, here impersonalized clothing and becomes human, though dead. To put it in the words of Sigmund Freud, the uncanny is in reality nothing new or foreign, but something familiar and old established, in the mind that has been estranged only by the process of repression. Helen recognizes the familiar in the unfamiliar body, a sign towards her love, and during this process she also recognizes herself as being afflicted, and thus wants to go zombie, shed all the restriction and morals of the community and be freed, just like the zombie. From now on, oh God, 5 minutes. She defies her husband and she establishes, once Bill dies with Fido, a zombie zone in her backyard where everyone can live with a zombie. And it's really interesting because all the heterosexual couples who are happy have a zombie at their side and are not married. So there is true love is always associated with marriage. And as Helen is married to Bill, this is not happy. So marriage is no longer the thing you need to aim for. You have to aim for something different, something with a zombie. So the last category, I'm cutting this a bit short, is that of wasting away. And the interesting thing is here that we get to see both versions. We have the colored versions of four friends who get turned into zombies because they ate radioactive ice cream. And they are always wondering, why is everybody so fast and talking so quickly? And this is the version they see. So the black and white version is what everybody else sees, shuffling and moaning people. And in the colored version, they're always pretty clueless. And being zombies, it does not affect their romantic notion that much. And I want to briefly discuss this kiss, because we see this kiss, and the colored version shows two of the four, Tim and Cindy, kiss passionately, yet caringly. And the black-white version shows a gross licking and biting sequence, which has the non-zombified humans, and we have an audience within the movie who looks on and are, one I think is even retching. And we are disgusted, but we are also supposed to be amused equally. And one should look at the metaphor of the body here. Julia Kristeva writes about the object, that it is the one, that it has only one quality of the object, that being opposed to the eye. This means that the zombie body is disgusting to us because it's both us and not us, and we recognize the body as being human, but also as being something other, something dead, and we are scared that we might become such an object body, whose mind is reduced to the urge of devouring flesh as a Romero zombie. In romances, true love intends to unify mind and body, but the commonest impediment to happiness in romance is uncertainty about whether the protagonists are really in love, or simply subject to an overwhelming erotic imperative, whether, in other words, the whole person is involved. And the kiss in the black and white scene is now seen as abject because it is performed by abject bodies. Romance and the enactment of love as disgusting. The non-zombified audience is grossed out because they do not perceive the kiss as sexy or romantic. But to Tim and Cindy, this kiss is sexy and romantic because it is their passion that comes into it. And they cannot have sex. Due to being a zombie, Tim's penis has fallen off. So their love is freed from the erotic imperative. And there is a love rooted solely in the person, the character, in their second zombified life. And they do not perceive themselves as abject too, because it's during many points in the movie, Tim's scalp falls off. And Cindy puts it back on very affectionately. So we see there is no disgust on either side of them. And the connection between the seemingly abject and true love is thus made, which only from the outside looks disgusting, but to the involved is the most beautiful thing. So the zombie-zombie relationship shares many trademarks with the human-zombie relationship, as both unions are looked upon suspiciously by society, and thus they have to establish their own realm where they can live happily ever after. Concluding, one can say that there is a perfect man or woman out there, but there is a good chance that he or she is dead, or rather undead. Concerning relationships involving a zombie, there is an affectionateness, an interpersonal relationship that could be envied by all the human-human couples of traditional rom-coms. As the rom-com is structured that we are all assured of the perfectly happily ever after, we will know that in the rom-zom-com they will be happy too. Yet in the human-human variety, there's always a crisis that the zombies have to solve by being a distraction from the relationship problems, but the problem is never initiated by the zombies. They are the kid that mends and unifies couples. These rom-zom-coms are generally fashioned with a redemption plot in which the underachieving hero has to be turned into a compassionate and caring lover. In rom-coms, this task is fulfilled by the heroine, as we've heard. Here, the zombies are the means which let him realize his wrong ways and man up. So he does it all by himself. In human zombie rom-zom-coms, the zombie is the instrument that solves the redemption plot, and the human heroine or hero becomes happy again and is no longer cold-hearted, bitter, and lonely. Of course, the zombie itself is also affected by this process and sheds the Romero zombie characteristics in favor of being a companion. Whereas lately, rom-coms have retorted to more traditional reactionary values, they have not taken into consideration new social developments, such as short-period relationship, homosexual pairings, or cohabitations, despite all their superficially cunning and dazzling postmodern traits. The rom-zom-com uses the zombie as the other to show that there are other forms of companion and relationship. Well, granted, the human-human rom-zom-com is hardly revolutionary, but the other two varieties can be read in multiple ways, some of which I hope to have revealed today, and I'm sorry I couldn't, due to time problems, tell you the other things, but next time you see a zombie or infected run, so should you, but keep looking for the slow-moving cousins because they are delivering love letters. Oh, that might be the one for you. Thank you.